How many plays have you done over the years?
Oh, many. Many, many, many.
Would you do another one? Should we do a play? And put it up somewhere and do it as like a fundraiser someday?
That'd be great.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Matinair. And while we spent the first hour largely talking about my anger over not funding childcare,
you're not
in
alone.
This state, we now move to a little bit older, still talking about kids, but now talking about how we feed kids once they're in schools. And so here to talk about that with us is Caitlin Harrison, who is the president of the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin and the director of food service at the Elmbrook School District. Welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I can certainly empathize with that previous conversation. I have two little girls and one on the way, so.
You're pregnant
Ooh,
too?
It's tough out there. Yeah.
What do you do? I'm due in October.
Oh, excellent. I'm end of September. So
there you go. We're right around the same
awesome.
Time. Oh, so you'll have three. And how three under yeah. how old?
Five, three, and then baby. Yeah. Crazy times.
Man, so yeah, so you know the child care situation much more intimately yeah. than I do.
Yeah, it's tough out there. It's tough.
It is tough out there. But it is also tough as far as when we talk about school nutrition. As
absolutely,
you know, it's something that I think back. I'd like the milk. You know, we joke about the milk pouches and little carrots and stuff like that. And so, I was so interested in this because I know for a while that there's been during the pandemic, there was talks about free lunch for all. And so, I wanted to talk to you just kind of about in general where we're at with school nutrition in Wisconsin. So let's start at the very beginning and just kind of talk about what is school nutrition. What is the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin?
Sure. So what we are is a collaborative of school nutrition professionals across the state. So that could be anywhere from somebody who's a dishwasher in a building to a cook to a manager or director. So any of those folks, sometimes we see school business directors also join our association. So it's just a place for us to meet and have professional development. Our mission is to use our collaborative voice to advocate for quality nutrition for all children. So that has an impact across the board with whether it's a dishwasher, like I said, somebody on the serving line, or somebody like myself in a director position.
And so, I mean, you probably talk about this all the time, but for people who don't know, it's been a while either since they've had kids in school or they themselves have been in school. But can you explain how nutrition is such an integral part to education? Because I think sometimes people lose sight yeah. of that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I believe, and a lot of my colleagues and teachers, they can see it firsthand that a student can't learn in the classroom mm-hmm. unless they're prepared and have a meal in their stomach. A lot of times it's kind of a sad story, but a lot of times we see kids showing up on Monday morning who haven't had a meal literally all weekend.
Oh my God.
They're their first contact. They're running in to see us for breakfast and they can't wait to come back for lunch. And so I always give the example, like, how would you be able to focus at your desk or at your job if you are starving? I know I get hangry and mm-hmm. I cannot focus. And so think about those little kids who already have a challenged attention span. And all they can think about is how hungry they are. So really, we believe that we're the foundation of education because they can't do any of that learning until they have proper nutrition to fuel them for the day.
And what is the current status of nutrition in Wisconsin? Like, as far as both what is served, what is the kind of the obstacles to making sure that there is balanced meals available? And that's not even just the cost of them, but just kind of like what is served these days to make sure that they're getting a balanced meal?
Yeah. So if you are part of what is called the National School Lunch or School Breakfast Program, then you have to abide by certain regulations that the USDA sets forth. And so what that looks like in a high level is we have sodium restrictions. Everything we serve has to be whole grain rich. We have fat limitations. So saturated fat can't exceed 10% of our total calories. We cannot serve any trans fats. We have to serve an array of fruits and vegetables every week. And then of course there's calorie limits that we have to abide by depending on the age of the student. So there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes of feeding their kids, and making sure that they're getting a full healthy meal every day.
And so what, cause there's a new, legislation or at least a proposal as far as healthy school meals in all in Wisconsin for all mm-hmm. in Wisconsin. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, our association's been working on this for quite a while. Of course, over the COVID years, we had 2 years of funding that allowed us to serve every meal for free to students in the state of Wisconsin. And so then as of this school year, the 22-23 school year, that ended, that went away. So students were back to either paying full price or they had to qualify for their free or reduced meal benefit. And so we've been working since the end, and actually since before that, to advocate to make sure that every kid, regardless of income in the state, has access to a healthy, nutritious meal. We were really excited when Governor Evers included it in his budget proposal for the state, including some additional breakfast funding to make sure that we have the resources we needed to serve kids. Heartbroken the last couple of days as that was, of course, cut out amongst many other things. But we were just excited to see it in the budget and see that we had some backing of some of our state leaders. Unfortunately, politics are politics, and I don't know how you could turn down a student and supplying them with a free meal, but here we are. So
here we are.
That's kind of where we're at. Our state representatives who are very supportive of this are planning to reintroduce a bill in fall as the school year kicks off. So we're hoping to gain momentum until that point so that we can get more support. Healthy School Meals for All is a coalition that we work with in SNA Wisconsin to help get to all different aspects and all different organizations across the state to really build this up and make sure it happens.
Because it's one of those things where the actual logistics, I think people don't understand. And I only learned this through following this, because this has kind of been a conversation for a while. Like, we're recording our show from Waukesha right now, which, you know, famously made national news when their school board did not want to give handouts to kids. And then there was they reversed that decision. But because what I read, and especially when I think it was a WPR article where you were quoted in it, that there was a family who, because as it is right now, there is an income threshold as far as there was a hard income threshold that if you make this or less, you qualify for free or reduced lunch. If you make even $5 more, it's a hard cutoff. And you had a family that you had to cut off, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's more than just one family, and there's certainly families that we're just not aware of. But I believe the statistic is if you, as a family of four, make $35,000 and some change, you don't qualify for free or reduced price meals, which is wild to me because I think about my family of four and I can't even imagine trying to live off of that amount of money, let alone serving food to my kids. So very challenging. And we don't even hear about a lot of families who are too proud to apply for free or reduced meals, who you can see the income guidelines. So maybe they're making their own determination and not even applying. But there are so many stories like that, that families are just over that income guideline and there's no assistance for them, unfortunately.
Because then doesn't it all, because basically that's what it happens. If they don't qualify for those programs, even if they are not making a lot of money, it's either they still have to figure out how to pack a lunch, they have to pay for lunch, or kids just don't eat, right?
Yep, absolutely. And a lot of those students we see still coming to school hungry. And then that falls on the back of the schools, right? So it's either a school nutrition challenge or it's a school challenge, because I've seen countless teachers who go and buy granola bars or string cheese, or they have it in the office for a kid who comes in and complains that they have a stomach ache. Well, it's because they haven't eaten in how many hours or days. So it's not, there's still a cost to it, right? And somebody is footing that cost. It's just, why aren't we doing that as a whole for our state, and really impacting so many students that we know we miss? We couldn't even quantify that number, because we don't force every family to apply for free or reduced meals. So there's certainly a bunch of families that could be qualifying, and we're just unaware of that.
Because it's totally opt-in, right? And so it's like, but like you said, it's either pride or potentially not even knowing that it exists.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. So, you know, that's one of the things that we do, is we try and promote our programs to the best of our ability. Unfortunately, it also takes work with our buildings and our districts to help spread that word and make sure that families are aware of what benefits are available to them too.
Our guest is Caitlin Harrison, who is the president of School Nutrition of the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin and the director of food service at the Elmbrook School District. We got to take a short break. When we come back, I also just want to talk about the logistics and the obstacles it creates on the administration side, because it basically forces all of you to be like, you know, bookies who are coming after kids like school debt, which is like a terrible way, but it does, right? And so we'll talk more about the advantages of what this actually, if we would have funded it in the school, in the state budget, if we could get this passed in the next couple years, what that could look like for all kids, with our guest, Caitlin Harrison. But stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be back after the break. Get me released, me is all on the coroner's week, and I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going, I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rosie, the queen of Corona. See you, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See you, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See you, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, here with Jane Matinair, and also talking to Caitlin Harrison, who is the president of the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin and the director of food service at the Elmbrook School District. And Jane, you had a question.
I did. Caitlin, I think that there is this perception out there, especially for older people and people who don't have school-age children or might not even have grandkids. And I think some just assume that these kids who are going hungry just have bad parents. And they're not trying, and they're sucking off the system, and they want us to feed their kids for free because they're lazy and they don't work. Is that accurate?
No, 100% not. You know, we see, actually in the office yesterday, we were just having a similar conversation to this. And we were talking about how we see families who have like this incredibly large debt with their accounts. And we allow, you know, a payment system there. But when you make contact with these families, it's never, oh my God, I totally forgot. I ignored all the emails. It's never that. It's always, I'm sorry, I haven't gotten paid this week yet. I will get a check in the mail. How can I set up a payment plan? I have not once had a family say, I just didn't think about it. It's never been a case of being lazy or, you know, I'm sure that in some districts, I can't speak for all, that there might be some people out there, but we have so many checks and balances in our system that there's no way to allow that. And I think that, like I said, there's a lot of checks and balances and ways for families to only follow the rules, and we enforce those, of course. So there's really just, there's no room for that at all in our programs.
And we're also talking, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but as we said, Elmbrook, which is right in our neck of the woods. And I don't think when you think of Elmbrook, when you think of Brookfield, New Berlin, Waukesha, these areas, I would say on average, we think of those as higher income areas in the state.
Yeah.
So if this is happening in Elmbrook, imagine what's happening in Racine, in Kenosha, in Wisconsin Rapids, in areas that are economically
challenged,
much more challenged with far less jobs than the situation that Elmbrook is in right now. And there's still families who are struggling so much that they can't, they're in debt because of school lunches. Like, that is insane to me. And it's also putting people like you who got into the business of feeding children, and part of your job has to be collecting debts. Like, that is mind-boggling to me that that is part of your job description.
Yeah, I got to say, that's literally the worst part of the job. And it certainly doesn't just fall on my shoulders. It falls on the team that we have at our district office. And then also our cashiers who are working, you know, quote unquote, the front lines with those kids. And at times you have to have those incredibly difficult conversations about, hey, you know, and I'll say right off the bat, most districts, including Elmbrook, we make the decision to feed kids regardless of if they have a negative debt or not.
Okay.
However, you contact families and they don't return your calls for whatever reason. And you have to get that communication out somehow. And so sometimes that means that you have to say that in the school lunch line, or you have to make those difficult phone calls. And that is literally the worst part of the job, that you have to tell a student that they don't have enough money. They have to remind their parents, bring money in, or just say, hey, there's an assistance program out there. But of course we would never say that to a student in a line, but, it's a very sensitive topic and, conversation, and really difficult and challenging to navigate.
Absolutely. So I guess on the, what could be, if we had the political will, what could be? And so what is the, I guess, like, how much would it even cost? Like, to put it into, like, relative terms, as far as if we actually wanted to take away the stigma, all kids who wanted to have lunch and breakfast provided, like, what would that actually cost for a district or for the state?
Well, and don't quote me on this because I don't have the figures right in front of me, but I will point out that I believe the state has a lot of extra funds in their budget right now that they could make this happen without any extra cost to the budget for 2 years. They could pay for this and have absolutely nothing else come out of the budget proposal. But of course, that's not how a lot of people see it. So I believe it is. So if we just simply increase breakfast funding, which was another ask that we had, and that got cut as well, that would be $2 million, right? And that is actually in state legislation that we should be getting reimbursed at 15 cents for every breakfast. But we haven't seen that funding come to fruition because we just haven't had the backing on that. For school, for full school meals, I believe it's closer to $150 million for, the biennial budget. However, one thing that I always like to say is think about the impact that that could have on our communities and the families. They could spend that money directly in our communities. They could support local agriculture. A lot of the food that we serve in school nutrition programs is locally sourced. We purchase all of our milk from Wisconsin. And for Elmbrook specifically, we're talking $200,000 a year in milk purchases.
Wow.
So the agricultural impact that that would make is far exceeding what that price point is.
This is supposed to be a fun show.
It is a fun show. We just talk about serious things.
We just talk about seriously, especially on this Friday. On this Friday before my birthday. All right. Well, Caitlin Harrison, thank you so much for spending time with us and for your work. Here's hoping that the continued fight to get this passed, even if it's not in this budget. But thank you so much for spending time with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day. All right. We got to take another break, but we'll go back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry with Jane Matinere, and I guess we're kind of tangentially ending where we started, because at the beginning of the show we were talking about the workforce and our workforce challenges, and one avenue of alleviating that would be to have more comprehensive childcare and let people who want to work, who also have kids, get back to work. But another, I think, oversight that a lot of people have is there's an entire community of people who can work, and if we could maybe address some of the obstacles to them working, could also be a huge part of that, like fixing our workforce labor shortage, and that is our disabled community. And so here to talk more about that and also some of the, like, what does a inclusive workplace look like is a disability speaker and advocate and also the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Director for the Wisconsin State Council of the Society for Human Resource Management, Matt Glowacki. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing so good. And thank you so much for having me today. What a great discussion. And thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess just a little bit more on your background, because I think I first came across your name in an article I read about this. But this is like your career. Like, you do speaking. You are very much an advocate in the community. And so what is kind of your background before we jump into this specific issue?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for letting me share, especially in this format. It's a little difficult to see. I'm a person who was born without any legs.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
That kind of, yeah. And so it kind of puts me into the oppressed community in a unique way. And it gives me some unique lenses on, the way we handle disability in life and in the workforce. And so thank goodness Wisconsin SHRM has had the foresight to allow me to come in and help them answer some questions and design some programs that will hopefully not only bring more people with disabilities into the workforce, but accommodate the existing people in the workforce that are currently finding out that they might have some non-apparent disabilities brought on by the impact of the pandemic.
Absolutely. So in the article I read, you were quoted, and it's something that I've actually said a fair amount just as an observation, because I have family members who were born with a disability, either spina bifida, Down syndrome, had a cousin with muscular dystrophy, but then I've also seen my older family members get older and not be able to do stairs or not be able to do, you know, certain activities because of physical limitations. And so in the article you said, disability is one of the most inclusive oppressed identities that's out there. Everybody either is disabled already, or they will be disabled, or they will love someone who is disabled. And I think that is such a true statement. And yet so often we overlook the accommodations that could make the workplace, entertainment venues, like, more inclusive to people, despite us all knowing someone who has either a physical or a mental limitation, right?
Absolutely. And I it's a little weird to say it, but disability is a little leaky. And so a person who has a disability also has people around them that love and care for them. And that disability impacts those caregivers as well. Yeah. And especially right now, we're looking at close to 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 people brought on after the pandemic that are actually caring for someone in their life right now.
Wow.
And so we think that maybe we don't know anybody who's doing it. But the truth is, there's nothing in it for the people who are doing it to talk to other people about it, because there's very little you can do to help them and support them. And so we are talking about trying to bring people with, you know, disabilities into the workforce, and I was born without any legs. And so I kind of know what that looks like. And my accommodating device is a wheelchair. And I'm very fortunate because I have easy access to transportation, unlike 80% of the other people with mobility impairments who really would love to have a job, but they don't have that easy access. And yes, there's Uber and things like that. But I come from the HR where we actually need existing good systems that allow people to have easy access not only to the work, but to the transportation system that they need to be able to go to the place where they can validate their identity and get that agency feeling of knowing that they can act, influence, and transform other people at work. And that's what we really want for everybody to get when they have a job. But for people with disabilities, it's extra important because most people with disabilities who don't get out of their house, imagine that means they never have the ability to go into another space mm-hmm. and bring that kind of value to a large group of people at the same time, or even have anybody in their life that might not be paid or be a family member in those people's lives. And so when we are talking about people who don't have access to jobs, it's not just the job that they don't have access to, it's the identity that they don't have access to because they're being denied, you know, something that most people take for granted, which is the opportunity to be able to use their gifts in a way to benefit society.
And so, because there is a gap, right? Because I think on paper, there's a lot of employers who say they're open to hiring people with disabilities, both apparent, non-apparent. But there is a gap between the saying we are open to it and the actual employment of that group of people, right? And so what is causing the gap? You just mentioned transportation. Is there other things on top of that?
Absolutely. A million things. And one of the problems with disability, when we look at it as an oppressed group, it's very difficult to make one change that benefits everybody.
Yeah.
And so every disability is different. So every hardship looks different. So every accommodation looks different. And so how do we find out what people need? Well, the hardest part is asking them, because we don't know the right questions to ask. And very few people who are experiencing some kind of hardship know how to describe it. I love it when people say, well, I don't really know how to describe the water I'm swimming in if I'm a fish. Well, of course, right? But so within the moment when we're feeling the friction of our lives and whatever that hardship is, for somebody to come in and go, hey, what is it exactly you need right now? And then we'd like to give it to you on a consistent basis. Oh my gosh. So the truth is we have to start with a very, very safe and flexible, empathetic conversation called the interactive process that we can get from ADA and the legislation about how do we design reasonable accommodations for people. Well, we first talk to them about what they're going through. So I think mental health, really, it's a three-legged stool that has three different components. The first one, of course, is DEI, because we are talking about disability. It's an oppressed identity, and it is now the largest minority in the United States because ADA covers things like non-apparent disabilities, like anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress,
really?
Trauma. Oh, yeah. And alcoholism. And so right now we're talking about a group of people who aren't getting the services they really might have access to because they don't want to have to admit to being the thing that nobody wants, which is disability. So it's hard to ask people what they want if they're not successful in a job situation and try and have a context around what they're experiencing as a disability when nobody wants to be disabled in the first place. And so the first component is a three-legged stool, emotional intelligence, because we have to figure out how to talk to people about it. We get the framework of interactive process and accommodation from ADA, and then DEI is the conversation about, well, how do we talk to people about what they're going through? And so mental health is a three-legged stool. And if we don't have all three parts, then it's going to be hard to design or even validate the identity of the person to let them know they have enough self-esteem to deserve a job and then try and, you know, set up a situation where it's successful enough and individual enough to give those people an opportunity to bring their whole self to work.
We're talking to Matt Glowacki, who is a disability speaker and advocate and the D&I Inclusion Director for the Wisconsin State Council of SHRM, also known as the Society for Human Resource Management. And I don't want to go too far down this tangent because I want to stay on topic. But I think I just want to point out that when we talk about D&I, which has gotten a lot of press this week, and D&I also, disability falls under D&I when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so often we think about race and we think about ethnicities, but it's also disabilities, correct?
Absolutely. One of the things people miss is privilege can mask disability. I'm a person who uses a wheelchair, but I do manufacture them for elite level athletes in North and South America. So I've got 13 wheelchairs. And yeah, they cost about $12,000 a piece. And so I don't have a problem with mobility because privilege can mask disability. Are you with me on that?
Explain that a little. I think I am, but go a little bit further for other people.
So, just 1 second. Just $12,000.
Oh, sure. Well, the wheels themselves are over six because all of the prices for bicycle stuff and wheelchair stuff have gone up so much because of reimbursement rates coming out of Medicare and what the government's doing with healthcare. So that's another conversation on another day.
Conversation.
Yeah. But oh my gosh, there's so many aspects to this. And so when I design a wheelchair for a person, when a normal person goes and buys a wheelchair, they go, well, how wide is your butt and how long are your legs? And then you get to choose one of three. But that is not a way that we can employ people because no one accommodation actually fits everyone. Right now, the friction we're feeling in the workforce around work from home has everything to do with it's a one-on-one conversation that needs to happen between an employer and the employee based on what that employee needs. Not everybody needs or not everybody has the opportunity to work from home. And so one blanket statement that includes everybody isn't going to be the way that's going to work. And so what we need to do is be able to train people and give people the weapons that they need to have that powerful conversation where we can make people feel emotionally safe while validating what they're going through. And the issue is when we come from an employer to an employee, we've got all these ideas about, well, if you just use this app or whatever, but what we've really learned is I can't ask you to do one more thing to help your mental health because you already know the three things that you're not doing. And so what we really do need to do is to come into a business or come into a culture and validate the identity that everybody deserves to get better. I run a SHRM chapter, a small chapter in Jefferson County. And we just got some great demographic information. It turns out half the people that I'm drawing my population from believe that it's a moral failing to go and get help for their mental health. And so the first thing in any kind of, the first way that we even have to have a conversation when we're talking to people about what they're going through is listen, if you break your arm, you go to the hospital. If you've got some things happening in your mind, and we might call it brain fog or whatever the right term is of the moment, those are things that we can talk about too. And I'm the guy in the wheelchair. Everybody wants to help me, right? I live a bootstrap argument. What I'm trying to do is validate the disability identity inside of able-bodied people to let them know that they want to help me because they think I'm in a wheelchair. I want to help them because I see what you're going through. And everybody who's disabled is like, oh, the able-bodied people, you know, the world is so accessible. Yes, it needs to be because it's really hard for able-bodied people right now. It really is. Collectively, science is showing we're looking at a 3 to 5 point IQ loss. The United States is designed for 100 IQ, all of our menus, all of our tax forms. The reason why things aren't working right now is because of a collective friction that is being imposed on everybody that we're all feeling that makes us less efficient. That's why everybody's in cognitive dissonance and we can't even meet people in their eyes anymore because we've got too much at risk. We could say something. It used to be people wanted to come up and talk to me about what I'm going through. Now people just want to help and they want to run away because they don't want to say the wrong thing. Mm. What we need is empathy. We need understanding. I call it flexibility and empathetic flexibility. When you meet somebody, talk to them, ask them how they're holding up. What we found out of SHRM is that we've developed a thing. It's on our Accommodate in Place website. We know how to turn on resiliency genes inside people. And it turns out everyone is born with resiliency genes, just like they're born with genes to tell them how tall they are and everything else. It's like a swimming pool inside of all of us. But unfortunately, we're not all born with the same amount because what happens to us during our lives changes us and then we pass on those genes. So the best thing we can do is turn on the ones we have. And we can do that through a model of helping called Eat, Sleep, Move people. And that's how we turn on resiliency genes in people. And that's the best shot we got. Because when you help somebody in all four areas, eat, sleep, move, and with their people, it feels like love. And right now there's an absence of caring in the marketplace. And so we need to let people know that their employees care about them and that there are new investments in culture that their employees or their employers are willing to make. We just have to engage in that conversation. And the employers want to have that conversation mm-hmm. with their people, but the people have to know and believe that they deserve help. And so that's the thing. We need people to know that everybody's going through something. And my wheelchair might make it look like I'm going through something, but I don't know what your wheelchair looks like because it's a non-apparent disability. And so people think they deserve the help. But I deserve help because I'm going through something, and you deserve help because you're going through something too. So thanks for having the conversation about this today. I really appreciate, you know, you well, of course, offering the opportunity to have the conversation. You can reach me at diversitydirector@wisconsinsherm.org also. I do have a separate thing where I do some consulting and helping for people. That's just mattglowacki.com, but that's a lot. So just Google Matt No Legs or No Legs Matt, and you'll get to me. Thanks
but
again.
But you also wrote a book. He also wrote a book called Able Body Like Me,
Yes.
which has been called A Perceptive Discussion of Disability and Bias. And I can see why you're a paid speaker on this. You are very motivating, Matt. This is it's such an important issue, and the way that I feel like the perspective you have on this is... As someone who has a lot of family members who, you know, have faced stuff like this, like, good for you. This was really
totally.
Fun.
You know, the employment story out of the book that I love the best, I got a job at AT&T, and two out of the three managers didn't think I could do it. But it was a woman who was gay. And she said, give him a chance. And they said, how is that guy going to carry a telephone system, you know, from business to business? And she said, I don't know, but why don't we ask him? And they did. And I was the most successful salesman for AT&T for 2 years in Milwaukee.
Boom!
And they gave me a chance. That's what we're doing. We got to give people a chance to surprise
you. Give people a chance. All right, Matt Glowacki, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day. Have a great weekend.
No problem. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate the work.
All right. We got one more break. We'll be back after that. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. Jane, what's the theme of the music been today?
Last night was the induction into the 2023 Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Oh.
So I have plucked different artists that were inducted last night, including Jeff Lynne from ELO, Gloria Estefan from the Miami Sound Machine.
Nice.
Paul Simon's already in there. Alanis Morissette. A producer for her was inducted last night, so I've just been kind of sprinkling a few here and there.
Very fun. And then, of course, we have the Oak Ridge Boys at the first hour because we are giving away tickets
tonight
for the Tonight Show at 7 p.m. at the Oshkosh Arena. The Oak Ridge Boys have been around for 50 years?
Long, long career.
Have you ever seen them?
I haven't, but I certainly know their music. They sound like nobody else. Especially that bass, the guy who sings bass.
Okay.
I've always had, I sang bass in a quartet, in a woman's quartet. If I could only get that low. Oh.
You have a thing for some bass voices?
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Brian's hot chocolate fudge Sunday voice.
Make me crazy.
But yes, all right. So we have, if you call in right now, even after the show, 844-967-2789. We will get your information to go to the Oak Ridge Boys at the Oshkosh Arena at 7 p.m. tonight. Phones are open. Jane will take your call.
You betcha. I'm standing by.
Your
birthday is on Sunday.
My birthday is on Sunday. I'm turning 37 years old. Last birthday, sans baby. So we're going to Door County.
Oh, nice.
And because, you know, now the thing is that people take like baby moons, which I feel like was not a thing. Like, I don't think my parents went in. My parents didn't even go on a honeymoon.
Baby moon was not a thing. Trust me.
The funny story with my parents, because when my parents got married, my dad was coaching for the Badgers. I think there used to be a JV team. So he was coaching. Bo Ryan was, I don't know if he wasn't the head coach. He was the assistant coach. There's some story around that. And they were staying at a hotel and they had given no one the number, because they didn't go on an actual honeymoon, but they were staying at a hotel, and that no one had their phone number, and somehow Bo still tracked down my dad and called and said, why aren't you at practice?
Oh, that's hilarious.
And he had to get out of bed and go to practice.
No.
It's like either the day after or the Monday after their wedding. Like, the story goes something like that.
Oh, wow.
So they never got a honeymoon. I'm pretty positive they never did a baby moon, but this is, you know, we went on our honeymoon for 2 weeks last fall. And so I was like, we don't need to go on like another trip. And so
I would think it would be like 6 months after she comes, you're going to want a break.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's more likely.
That would be my moon.
Yeah. And so, but we're going to go to Door County for the weekend for my birthday, which will be fun.
Lovely.
And
should be beautiful weather soon.
Yeah. And happy early Father's Day to all the fathers out there, especially to my father, Mr. Peter Bry. Every couple of years I have to share my birthday with Father's Day, which is fine.
That's all right.
Which is all right. But, yeah, I feel like today's theme, on top of, you know, Songwriter Hall of Fame inductees, was compassion. And just, you know, whether we're talking about helping working families afford childcare, helping the people who want to provide childcare actually earn and pay a living wage, whether we're talking about feeding children in school or making, you know, being more open-minded and accommodating to the different kind of workers and like giving them a purpose as far as where they want to work. And like, they're all, you know, they're three kind of distinct topics, but it all just comes back to like, let's like actually help each other.
And I genuinely believe that most of our fellow Wisconsinites believe that too. I do.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, you made the point of, you know, people assuming the worst. And it's people in like when we were talking with to Caitlin about
the lunches
and, well, you know, it's bad parenting or they're lazy or whatever.
They're just bums.
And it's just like, when did we get into this rut of assuming the worst of people instead of having more compassion? And, you know, and this idea, this punitive idea that you have to pay for your mistakes, let alone just pay for being poor, instead of how do we make it better for everyone?
Well, I unfortunately do think that among some, it's I got mine. I earned mine. You get yours. And I made my sacrifices, whatever those might have been. You do the same. Good luck.
But I just don't understand the resentment. You know, the resentment of you clearly, or the assumption mixed with the resentment of you haven't worked hard enough, which is why you don't have it and you don't deserve it because you didn't work hard enough. Instead of any kind of like a modicum of
empathy.
And
but that is seen by some as weakness, being empathetic.
Well, I don't want to be friends with those people.
We will shun you.
I don't think they want to be friends with me either, because that's basically...
you might have something there.
I think I'll probably make them a little too like sick to their stomach with the amount of empathy that I try to lead with in my life. I'm like, God.
She's so nice. She's driving me crazy.
But we also proved that I'm not always nice.
But even when you're upset and even when you're ticked off, you still come from a place of compassion and love, I think. Whereas I'm just old, bitter, and jaded. You're still a positive person.
I feel like if you were to, like, anyone listening, if you had to pick your torturer, you definitely want me over Jane.
Oh, absolutely.
Jane, with the right person, I feel like you would show absolutely no mercy.
I guess it would depend on the person and what they did. I'm sure I could work something out.
I just see your little Mr. Burns fingers. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for being a part of today's show. I'm sure this conversation around... Well, actually, here's this conversation about all three things we talked about today. Childcare, school lunches, disability accommodations. Will not be the last time we talk about any of them. But for now, take care of yourselves this weekend.
Try and take care of each other a little bit.
Try to take care of each other. Go out, touch some grass, try to be offline. But then come back on Monday at 10 a.m. when we'll do this all again. But in the meantime, thank you for texting and calling and watching and being part of the show. I love my job. I love you.
Love you, lady. Happy birthday.
Thank you. We'll
happy,
see you.
Happy Dad's Day, everybody.
Happy Dad's Day. We'll see you guys on Monday. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.